Welcome back to Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I am Madeline.
And today we are doing something really beautiful, wonderful, mystical, magical love affair. It is called Revisiting Folklore once again. And I have to be honest, I haven't listened to Folklore front to back in quite a while.
Happy birthday, Folklore!
Happy birthday, Queen.
Happy birthday, Folklore. You are six.
She's Happy six sixth birthday.
Years old. She's 6 years old. Oh, that actually blew my mind. The fact that, also, that's a good way to remember how many years I've been married, because I got married like 2 weeks before Folklore came out. Kind of sad, if you think about it. I a lot of missed opportunities there. But nonetheless, happy birthday, Folklore. I've been saving it. It's funny because I save it for the summer. It's summer. Hello? Has anybody looked out the window recently? The sky's on fire. You can't eat the fruit. It's obviously summer. So I was like, how come I haven't been listening to Folklore? I haven't been listening to it. I listened to it about 2 times through. Not every song. I mean, I have a couple of skips and we'll get into that. But I listened to it like 2 times through in preparation for the episode. And I was like, you know what's scary is that this might be one of the greatest albums ever made.
No, I had the exact same thought because I was trying to rate it and then I kept coming up, even when they were songs that aren't my like personal favorites, I had to keep giving out tens, not just eights and nines. I had to keep giving out tens and that really gagged me. And what gagged me when I listened to this was that Lover barely came out like 6 months before this happened. That is the craziest. This is the most jarring tonal shift in Taylor Swift's career ever in the history of the world. And it is extremely arguable that she would not be where she is now without Folklore. It did something so essential for her career. And also, I think this is her favorite album. Of all of them, I think this is her favorite.
Well, then let's run it back. We've been waiting for the Third Sister album. We've been waiting for Woodvale. If there are any Woodvale truthers still out there, put some W's for Woodvale in the chat, please, because I've always thought...
W's for Woodvale.
Some people think Midnight's is a Third Sister record. I'm amenable. I'm interested in the theory. I think that would be a really fun perhaps episode to make. I don't know, hint, hint to ourselves. But I've always kind of thought there's another true, like actual Folklore Evermore Third Sister record inside of her somewhere. And I do kind of think this methodology of songwriting is like one of her favorite ways that she's ever written songs before. I'm saying let's run it back. I'm not over it yet.
It's a shame that people, including us, have gotten too invested in the whole she's writing covert messages about her life, even when she tells us that she's not, because she was doing it. But when I was listening to this back, I was like, this truly is the composite sketch album. It is songs that are about influences from her life, but also about experiences you can tell that she didn't have, but she writes through with empathy. And that is the greatest, most beautiful thing about Folklore. And it was received, you know, as the goddamn mother quake, ground shaking shift in her career by the critics, which we'll get into in our yearly episode of 2020, which is coming at some point in some future in some world.
I would say I hope you're not staying up every night looking at the calendar wondering when is it coming, but I would say you can know in your heart it will come someday, and I think we should leave it at that.
That's beautiful. I think that's the exact correct statement to leave it at. So we decided that we were going to go through all the songs, give you our little take on how we feel about them now, pick a favorite lyric, and rate it out of 10. Divas, you won't believe what happened to me. I had a sudden flare-up of eczema on my eyelids, and I had no idea where to go to get it treated. I was hunting on Google. I was asking for recommendations on my close friend's story on Instagram. I was really low. It would have been so much easier for me to get the help that I needed if I had been able to use the sponsor of today's video, ZocDoc.
Here's how ZocDoc eliminates the hardest parts of getting the care that you need. ZocDoc lets you search and compare local in-network doctors right there online, so you don't have to hunt all over the internet to find the best care for you. Appointments happen fast, usually within 24 to 72 hours, and you can even score same-day appointments.
And the best part of it all is that it's free. Your health matters, and taking care of yourself really shouldn't be that complicated. So find and book the right doctor with ZocDoc.
Head to ZocDoc.com/snake to get started and check that appointment off your to-do list. That's ZocDoc.com/snake.
Thank you so much to ZocDoc for sponsoring this episode. One of the most difficult things is finding the perfect gift for the most important people in your life. If you're looking for a gift that's both thoughtful and luxurious, look no further than today's sponsor, Lola Blankets. And for a limited time, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola Blankets products with code SNAKE at checkout.
Ever since I got my Lola blanket, everyone who comes into my house comments on it, and it seems like no one can keep themselves from running their hands through the soft faux fur or testing out the iconic stretch fabric. Sometimes I even have to wrestle this blanket away from my cat because he loves how soft and fluffy it is.
One of the reasons the Lola is considered the number one blanket in the world with over 20,000 reviews is because it makes the perfect gift for any occasion, from birthdays to housewarming gifts to baby showers and wedding gifts. This blanket is a great way to let your friends know that you want the very best in comfort for them, and it's become our go-to gift for our favorite people.
So whether you're gifting a Lola or snagging one for yourself, you can get 40% off select Lola blanket products with code SNAKE at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code SNAKE. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our podcast and let them know we sent you. Wrap yourself in luxury with Lola blankets.
So why don't we start with a goddamn 10 out of 10. This is the one. By Aaron Dessner, the first time we ever heard an Aaron Dessner-Taylor Swift collaboration. And oh my God, did this change that world. When I hear that piano chord, I'm instantly transported back to where I was when I first heard this song. And it was like the middle of the pandemic. And it was like such an introspective time, but in a bad way. It was like, I'm waking up and looking at the New York Times every morning and going, oh my God, it seems like the world is going to end and nothing is ever going to be okay ever again. I remember Folklore being the first time in that period of time of isolation where I felt like I could be romantic about it.
Yes, there is something like really romantic is the right word, because it kind of takes you away to a place, especially the one music video that came out from the Folklore era, the Cardigan music video. It makes it seem like this private, you know, lonely place that you've had to sort of maintain ever since the pandemic started. There's actually something beautiful about it, and like you can actually create, and there's different ways to kind of look at the situation that you're in. And probably the most romantic way that you could look at it is the way that Taylor decided to look at it, which was, well, can't do anything goddamn else. I might as well write songs. I might as well kind of, I've always found Folklore to be her dreamiest record, not in terms of like, oh, it's got like a dream pop sound, because it doesn't, more in a way where it's like, it's dreams. Like these are fantastical webs that have been spun, and it is incredibly romantic, and it made me feel like everything's gonna be okay. And you know what? It was. After Folklore came out, I said, it is gonna be okay. Thank you so much, Taylor, for reminding us. We need to hear it.
We really needed this. It was like getting hit over the head and knocked out for an hour and blissfully taken away to like dreamland where nothing bad can happen to you and everything is like fun and whimsy. Or even if it's not fun, it's still whimsical. Right. Like there's the sense that it will end. Like it's a dream, like you said, that will pass over you. But also, I think at this point in the pandemic, we had had like Dua Lipa with Future Nostalgia, yes, which was the first like pandemic album. We had Charlie's How I'm Feeling Now. This really felt to me like the first pandemic album that had like a real monoculture moment and provided people with something that they needed, which is why I think people, even not Taylor fans, are so emotionally attached to this as her best record. It was a public service.
It was a public service, and that's why it won Album of the Year. Out of all of Taylor's Album of the Year wins, of which she has several, the one that like, I'm not taking notes, I can't hear any other side, Folklore was Album of the fucking Year that year. And it's like, nobody has ever, ever, ever contested that. Album of the Year, hands down, no notes. It's the perfect album for that year.
It was the perfect album of the year. The lyric that I picked that was my favorite is, what else is it gonna be but, for me, the introduction. I'm doing good, I'm on some new shit. Been saying yes instead of no. I thought I saw you at the bus stop, I didn't though. It was so, this is one of my favorite things that Taylor does, is she instantly situates you in a perspective. Like you're with her walking, yes, down the street alone, doing a double take of someone you like, oh my God, it was someone that you once loved and you thought you might run into them again. Then you realize that it's not, but it prompts a spiral. It prompts a thought spiral, right, and you start to go, wow, what if I just in my mind, what if he's written mine on my upper thigh, first of all, but second of all, what if I, in this period of time of isolation, just revisit the roads that I didn't take, like the times when I almost swerved and didn't. What would happen if I imagined that I did that?
I also have kind of a little bit of an attachment to the opening lines, because when I heard the one, it's not to in any way, shape, or form dunk on Lover, because Lover has kind of had a renaissance, as everybody knows.
We're the Lover podcast.
Right. We're the Lover podcast, as everyone knows. But when Folklore came out, nobody knew, is this going to be another pop record? Like, because we only had, 12 hours to think about it. Like, is it going to be pop? Is it going to be country? Like, those were the two options. There was no other option. We couldn't have even fathomed this, you know, third option. And when I heard those piano notes, all I knew was, this is not going to be Lover. And then when I heard, you know, the first few lines, I was like, oh, she's doing the thing. I don't know what the thing was, but like the thing that people always said Taylor couldn't do, she could never really write an album like this, is I think what people had been saying about her for so long. And from the first lines of the song, I was like, she's doing the thing that everybody said she could never do. She's doing a singer-songwriter album. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, haters.
No, eat her shorts.
And they smoked it.
Eat her shorts.
They smoked it. They had no choice.
They had no choice. Also, from a meta perspective, that line, I'm doing good, I'm on some new shit, it works on so many different levels. I'm doing good. No, you're not. It's a pandemic. No one's doing good.
Lies.
I'm on some new shit. Yes, you are. Because, like, this is a complete tonal shift from what you've been doing before. So, it, like, this song, if you didn't get to see it on the Eras Tour, I legit think you should be able to file for, like, workers' compensation or something. Like, that's really, it's crazy.
Yeah. The Folklore set was always a moment where I was kind of half there, half not. It was so surreal in so many ways.
Just like Folklore.
I definitely saw the one live. If you want me to be totally honest, I kind of have blacked it out. I definitely have a video, thank God, but I don't remember it. Folklore and Midnights are my two did that happen sets on the Eras Tour. That's where my amnesia comes in. But if you didn't get to see it at all, you should be able to follow for compensation, because it's not fair, because it was beautiful. I think
to me, this is kind of the song from Folklore. Like, I know there are cardigan truthers out there, and we're about to get into it, but I'm saying, and the one streamed very well instantly, the one to me should have been the single. I think it, but it was too I miss you ? That's not my boyfriend.
I think I've a lot of people. Back when I used to work at The Box, you know, I would play my playlist and this would be on my playlist. There was nobody who I worked with and nobody who I've ever met who's listened to this song, and nobody when I used to watch reaction videos who's reacted to this album who hasn't liked this song. It's one of those songs that I think everybody can kind of relate to in their own ways. Who doesn't have not just a one who got away, but the concept of, like, there's another life out there that I walked away from. And sometimes I still think about it, even if I shouldn't. Who doesn't have that? And it's so, like, wistful and yearning in, like, a really simple way. It's not too sad. In my opinion, it's, like, just sad enough. It's very, like, melancholy is what I would say about it.
It's like a brief thought. It's not a really intrusive thought. I like to think of this as Fortnite's happier sister, because Fortnite is the exact concept of the one, but imagine that I was in a version of that life where I hate myself and I want to die. The one is like,
interesting.
Well, you know what? I'm good, but can I ask you a question really quickly?
Like, right.
A quick question.
She's asked many questions. She has
Tay Tongues are
going to
be
questions.
Crazy in this episode, by the way. Don't get me started. There are so many connections.
The lyric that I picked as my favorite actually is from the last chorus of the song. We were something, don't you think? So, rosé flowing with your chosen family. Here we go. It would have been sweet if it could have been me. Makes me want to fucking kill myself. And what's crazy, I kind of think that this song overall, like, I've always said, oh, it's crazy to write the song when you're actively in a relationship. But what's really crazy about it is that I kind of think that this song is about accepting mediocrity and, like, giving into complacency. Saying the greatest loves of all time are over now, meaning the greatest loves that I've ever had are actually not good for me, and I have to accept this other thing. Some might call it daylight. It's not burning red, it's daylight, et cetera, et cetera. I have to accept this mediocrity. It actually always makes me think of this scene in one of the Ocean's movies. I don't know those movies well enough. It's like Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 12, but it's George Clooney and Julia Roberts. And, you know, they used to be lovers, but now they're not anymore, and they're talking. And Julia Roberts is like, I'm with Ted now. And George Clooney is like, does he make you laugh? And Julia Roberts says, he doesn't make me cry. And there's something about that where it's like they had so much like passion and like it was kind of, you might say, toxic, but like it was burning red maybe. And instead you're having to settle for this guy who's boring, but like he doesn't make you fucking miserable and like he's not making your life harder. So it's like it's complacency almost. But we were something, don't you think so? Well, yes, I do.
Well, yes. Beautiful. Then we go into what some people consider to be, oh, also I gave the one 10 out of 10. I presume you also gave it a 10 out of 10.
I give it a 100 out of 10.
Period. Exactly. We get into another Aaron Dessner moment, Cardigan. This is the song. This was the single. And I remember being confused when I heard it first, because I think I heard it before I watched the music video. And I was like, why is this the song? But sure. As I was listening to it, I went on a journey with it, as I always do. I was like, this is the chop. Like, this is boring. It's so overrated. But when you get into that second chorus, the song takes off. It's like the other side of the door, where it's one of those songs that is kind of like just whatever until it gets to a certain point, and then it's Nicki Minaj spitting bars. The entire final chorus of this is crazy. It's like the down-tempo version of the Cruel Summer Bridge coming back. It's like Leaving Like a Father, Running Like Water. It's crazy. And it's the Maddie song. When you listen to it with All We Know Now, Heartbeat on the High Line, To Kiss in Cars and Downtown Bars, He Sent Me Downtown Lights. And can I ask you a question? We should have known.
Well, that this signal is for you. You know who you are. I love you. Write it down.
That's still top five craziest 50 moments ever.
The fact that in that moment, everybody, I'm saying globally, we came to an understanding.
Intergalactically, I think.
We came to an understanding that Cardigan is about Maddie Healy and what that meant for like the discography and like the lore and the mythos and like everything shifted at that moment. I will never forget that moment. Cardigan, to me, like it is, it's hard for me because it's like it is the song. At the same time, it's, I find, I don't always want to listen to it. I need to be in the mood, and I'm agreeing with you, but like the first verse of this song, I don't like.
It's nonsense.
I'm speaking my truth. Brand new phone, sensual politics.
No, like that's her doing her nonsense.
Right, that's her doing her nonsense. So I think the second half of the song is some of the greatest stuff she's ever made. The first verse, not the first half, but just the first verse is hot nonsense. We really pick up our stride in the second verse forward, but I had to give it a 9.5 because I had to speak my truth. I was like, I have to dock it half a point because I know that there's parts of it that I don't like, even though it's like
I gave it a 7.
Okay, I thought. Okay, period. No, and I'm agreeing with you 100%. I'm seeing your vision 100%.
The lyric that I picked, it was so hard to pick because when I was looking at that last chorus, it really is, as you said, all-time Taylor Swift writing. Right. There are so many. It reminds me of mine in the way that she just fires off iconic lyrics one after the other. Lesser writers would take one of these lines and build the entire song around it. But the lyric that I picked was, I knew you'd linger like a tattoo kiss. I knew you'd haunt all of my what ifs.
And it's so true.
It's so true.
I picked a line from the exact same bar. I picked, I knew I'd curse you for the longest time, chasing shadows in the grocery line. What I love about that is how, actually, your line too is also like very visual and like visceral as well.
These are writerly moments.
These are writerly moments. This is Emily Dickinson. Not just anybody can do this. In fact, almost nobody can. And that's the truth.
That's why we forgive Showgirl, because folklore exists.
Folklore exists, and it's always going to exist.
You Showgirl when you do a folklore. She earned it. But yeah, thank you, Cardigan. Thank you so much, Cardigan. Up next, some might say, and this is one of the songs that I think was submitted to the Songwriters Hall of Fame, The Last Great American Dynasty. I'm just going to spoil everyone off the top and say 10 out of 10. Yeah.
I also gave it a 10 out of 10. A perfect 10. I have absolutely no notes. It's a perfect song. Yeah,
I will never forget how it felt to hear this for the first time. And I'm so glad that I have it on camera. I have it on SmackCam. The moment where I really truly was like, oh, we are so back was this song. The production is kind of like, when I listen to it, I'm always like, the production's kind of muted and the melody isn't that exciting, but I think that's because we're servicing the story. Yes. This is an expertly constructed narrative, and so much is said in not really very much time at all. This is the goth punk moment of female rage.
It is truly one of my favorite Taylor storytelling moments, and Taylor has a lot of songs now. Some songs are storytelling songs and some songs are not. This is probably the most optimal example of like Taylor at her storytelling memento. She really tells the whole story in a single song. It's less than 4 minutes long. No, I think it is, which is like,
yes, it's less than 4 minutes. Impressive. Crazy.
You kind of learn everything about this lady that is like the most important stuff from Taylor in this song. I feel like I don't even need to read the book. I feel like she just told me the book. I just read it. I read the Spark Notes. Thank you, Taylor. You're a storyteller.
No, she does that. And it's also, it's so brilliant because Rhode Island is the continual op in her story. She barely ever goes back there. Living there has been such a headache that she has basically like left it and moved on. But what I was thinking about was that Rhode Island is such an interesting example of like a meeting point of all the internet discourse about her existing in real life. Usually people are saying, we hate you, it's on the internet and she can't physically see it, but her neighbors goddamn hated her. They were basically sending her hate mail. They were protesting outside the wall that she made on the beach. Like, they very much unionized to say, we don't want you here. And it pissed her off so much so that she had to do this. And she did have a marvelous time ruining everything. The glee with which she delivers that line, oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, it really, you can hear the smile in her voice. And that's what makes me so happy. I had a marvelous time ruining everything. And I'm going to keep doing it, girls. And I'm going to keep doing it.
You know what I realized as well when I was listening to this? I think Folklore is her feminist record. As we'll get, I made notes all the way through, but like, this is her feminist record. Like, really, this is where she's doing her most fuck the patriarchy. I will buck the conventional gender roles that you are constricting upon me. I will interrogate all the different positions, much more so than something like 1989, for example, which was the girl boss feminism record.
I definitely think that during Folklore, she was really kind of ready to let go of a lot of things that she kind of felt like she had to hold on to for a long time, including like not saying fuck you forever. This was the first time she really swore, which is crazy. Which is crazy.
She was 30 years old, basically. How old was she? Yeah, she was 30.
Yeah, so that was really crazy. The first time she says fuck in a song, she's 30 years old. And so she was kind of like, you know what? I'm free. I'm free. Lover wasn't really the free album. Everybody thinks it is because like, oh, she's not on Big Machine anymore. But she had like this huge weight on her shoulders to like perform for this new label. And obviously it had to be a success. And she was going after her masters and like all this other stuff. Like, it wasn't fun. This was kind of the album where she really got to let her hair down and say, fuck the patriarchy. Any questions?
Well, I think also she was like, whatever happens, happens with this. She's like, it seems like the world is falling apart. Like, only a global pandemic could have brought Taylor down to her knees to stop her from creating another cycle of me. Like, I truly think no pandemic, we would have had Lover 2.0. I don't think Folklore would have come.
Which really makes you think. It does make you think.
It really, you know what? Makes you think.
Here we are. We're in this timeline. We're in this timeline. Thank God.
The lyric that I picked was, of course, free of women with madness, their men in bad habits, and then it was bought by me. That's my country girl. Yeehaw!
That's yeehaw! When I say yee, you say ha. The lyric that I picked was, they say she was seen on occasion pacing the rocks staring at the midnight sea. And in a feud with her neighbor, she stole his dog and died at Key Lime Green. 50 years is a long time.
It's a book. It's a book.
Holiday House sat quietly on that beach.
This free is a, this of women is a verse, with madness.
And then it was bought by me. This is one of my favorite parts, I think, of any Folklore song, maybe of any Taylor song ever. There is nothing more enjoyable. I can't sing along to this part of the song without smiling. I really can't. I don't know what it is. There's something like jaunty about it. There's a smirk in her voice. I can't help smirking along. I love it. It's not the kind of song where it's like, there are some like gaggy lines, but like, it's a story to me. So I like found it really hard to like cherry pick. I was like, you know what? Tell the story. They say she was seen on the
Canadian and that's the payoff.
Not the midnight sea. She was staring at the midnight sea. So was I. So was Taylor.
So I immediately thought of her and Tom Hiddleston sitting on that goddamn rock.
It makes you think. She was staring out at that Midnight Sea Girls.
Taylor could only make this song and this album because, like, we have this meta-textual awareness of all of, you can envision her being there. You know the right. story. Like, you can see it playing out in your head. It's like, I don't know, if Gracie Abrams was writing a song about how she lives in this house that some, like, rich lady from 50 years ago used to live in and everybody hated her, now they hate me. We'd be like, well, who cares? But the Rhode Island thing was, like, a national incident.
It was a national, everybody knew that house. Like, if you knew Taylor Swift and, like, you paid attention to her in the news, you knew about the Rhode Island house. It was a big deal. It was a very big deal.
4th of July, holiday house. It was too many things. And we were robbed of a music video in this house. We were really robbed of that.
Yeah, let's open the case.
I thought you liked acting.
I thought she liked making movies. I guess that was a lie. The paternity test determined that was a lie.
Up next we have, now this was Pandemic Psychosis, because this was one of my favorite songs when it first came out. Exile, produced by Aaron Dessner, co-written by Joe Alwyn, Flop, and Bon Iver makes an appearance here. First of all, can I say, one of the most annoying pieces of, like, discourse that exists on the internet is Taylor was a better writer with Joe Alwyn. The songs that he co-wrote on are not the best songs on this album by a country mile.
No, and I still maintain he didn't do jack shit.
No, he sat there. Isn't this the one where she was like, I walked in and he was moodily playing on the piano. Oh, give it a rest.
Give it up. Everybody knows he flopped himself in the room and just planted himself there. He had nowhere to go.
He said, I think it would be nice if you said, before instead of after. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, wow. He wrote the song.
The talking cheese has contributed to the song. We don't care.
We literally don't care.
This was a huge deal because it was a really big indie credibility moment for Taylor to get Bon Iver on a song. It really did seem like a stamp of approval that she wasn't going to get. And it was something she didn't think she was going to get. She's talked about how nervous she was to approach him and get him to come on this song. But you know what? Go figure. It's one of the most boring songs, more boring songs on the album. I guess you never needed the men to say we approve anyway. I guess you never needed that.
To me, if we're talking, you know, what is every song on Folklore? I'm saying Exile, overrated. Overrated. Yeah. People love, this is the, for lack of a better term or lack of a better, like, just for lack of a better term, straight people love this song. This is like their story. This is their story. I don't know what it is. And I'm talking about like a specific brand of like really, really, really straight, like Midwestern, middle of America people who have these terrible relationships. On Valentine's Day, they post, we've had lots of ups and downs and like, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, I hate you most of the time, but look at us. We're standing here tall, quote unquote. Like, these are the kinds of people that love the song. No offense to any normal people out there who love the song. There's something about it that really speaks to the women, the straight women of the world, who have terrible taste in men. It just speaks to them. And
well,
I think,
and it was coming from one of them. They detected it was coming from one of their kind. It's like, imagine if she co-wrote The Last Time with her current boyfriend. It's like, that's crazy. You're so lucky that you said this was fictional. And the fact that you gave him a pseudonym because you didn't really want people to immediately know that you wrote this song with your boyfriend, that was the warning sign. Also, you were my town, now I'm in exile, seeing you out is dumb. Sorry, that's like a mahogany grain line. Like, okay, not that interesting.
Also, when she says, you are my crown, stupid. I'm saying it. That's a Joe line. That's what Joe wrote. That's what Joe wrote.
No, Joe did all of this. I'm happy that Joe has this song. Have this one. I don't care. You're not on any of the ones that I really need to fuck with. I was, however, obsessed with this song when it came out. I don't know why. I do love the final bridge. It takes too long to get there, so I never sit through. But like when they start harmonizing and when Taylor's singing, I gave so many signs. That's pretty. The verse that I'm going to pick my favorite lyric from is Taylor's verse. And this is good. I can see you staring, honey, like he's just your understudy, like you'd get your knuckles bloody for me.
Yeah, that's what I picked too. There's nothing else.
Dump him.
Dump him.
Also, those eyes add insult to injury. That was a second choice for me.
Yes, that's a great. Oh, pretty much all of Taylor's verse is amazing. I actually don't like the outro. It pisses me off. I gave so many.
This times. Is the kind of thing you don't like and I like. It's very The Last Time coded.
It's there's something about it where it's like it makes really good fodder for like those TikTok edits that people make of their favorite television show couples. It's like perfect for that.
This is for normal people.
Yes, that's what it's normcore. That's what I was trying to get at. It's very normcore. And you know what? Taylor does have a side of her that goes norm. She's like very normal.
She's a millennial white lady. And people act surprised. They act surprised and they really shouldn't.
I gave Exile a 7 out of 10. I was being gracious and generous. I will say that.
I gave it a 6. You are being gracious and generous. I'm being gracious. Well, we don't have to be gracious and generous about the next one because you don't need to be gracious and generous to acknowledge how incredible and amazing and show-stopping and iconic and never been done before this song is. This is, of course, track 5, My Tears Ricochet, with Jack Antonoff, his first appearance on the album. This song still makes me want to kill myself and attack Scott Borchetta with a machete.
Yeah, this song is really upsetting. I hadn't listened to it, just like straight sitting listening to it, in a while, and the first time I did the other day, I was like, this is really upsetting. I'm not having fun listening to this. This is still, of all the songs that she's made about this situation more recently, this is the one that still is like a knife to the gut because it's so close to the actual like big hurt and like the big wound, and you can really hear that in her vocals and just in the way that she writes, comparing it to a death, and they're at a wake and like talking about her stolen lullabies, and she, you know, argues with him and when she's trying to sleep at night. It's just like very powerful and like visual. It's really sad. It hurts.
Such an unprecedented loss. And like unprocessed loss too. Like these are things, this is a betrayal she never expected would come to her. And this is coming from someone who's experienced quite a lot of betrayal already. So this was like the final, et tu, Brute. That really, it was that moment. And I think the production on this song is really cool. There's like synth organs or something. And like her voice is like warping as a production element. The lyric to me that really kills me and makes me want to die is the kind of, the last time she says it, I think it's right after the bridge. I didn't have it in myself to go with Grace. I'm gonna mount my steed and start a war. No, it's like, it's dead fucking serious. And that just, it's so true because like in Lover, when she was really lashing out at Scooter and Scott, like for a period of time, people forget this, it really did seem like that was a battle she was going to lose and that public opinion was not in her favor. And this particular issue was just getting lumped in with all her other public dramas. This and the Kanye stuff and the Katy Perry stuff, completely separate, different issues, but people were lumping it all together. And she was rightfully so angry and lashing out, and people were just lumping it in as, again, misogyny. Oh, she's complaining again. Oh, she's crying again. She's playing the victim. And she was like, I couldn't help myself. I didn't have it in myself to go with Grace.
Yeah, no, everything you just said is so true. Like, she just said, I can't do it. I'm too fucking mad and it hurts too much. I can't do it. I can't be, you know, Miss Taylor. The old Taylor can't come to the phone right now in the sense. Like, I can't be that little girl anymore who just goes along with everything you say. Can't do that. The lyric that I picked, it hurts so bad. It's the way she says it. Even on my worst day, did I deserve, babe, all the hell you gave me? It hurts. I could hurts.
Cry. I'm like
it
about hurts. To cry. It this hurts. Is horrible. It hurts. This is horrible. It I
hurts
hate it.
So bad. And the answer is no. No.
No.
Mm-mm. No. It hurts. It's really painful.
I fear we have to move on or I am going to cry. thank you. My Tears Ricochet. I gave it a 10 out of 10, of course. We love her. Another Jack moment. Now, this is, I would say, probably the fan favorite from Folklore. This is the one that gets brought up a lot. And along with, I think, The Last Great American Dynasty is what she would perceive to be some of her best songwriting. And it is Mirror Ball. Such a classic Jack and Taylor number. It's very Dark Side of the Gym. Immediately when I was listening to it in my reaction, I was like, oh, this is like a sad prom. Like Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Oh, yeah.
You're in the gym. There's like sad streamers. The punch bowl's empty. People are slow dancing. Just the stragglers are left. And like you're sitting on the bleachers being like, wow, nobody likes me. Should I kill myself? It also perfectly encapsulates the personal side of this album, but also what the pandemic was forcing all of us to do. Really sit with who we are when the lights are off and you can't go anywhere and you're alone with your thoughts.
You know what? When you were saying that, it kind of reminded you of like a bad prom. The song has always kind of reminded me of Two Slow Dancers by Mitski. Does it smell like a school gymnasium in here?
Another song that makes me want to kill myself.
Kill ourselves. Should we kill ourselves? Jack did a really, really great job with the production on this song. The way that it literally sounds like a mirror ball, he cooked. Mm-hmm. This is something he's really good at. Another song that showcases this particular ability of his to make the song sound like what Taylor's written is Down Bad. The alien abduction theme-y.
Yes.
Like, he's just really good at doing this. So
Midnight Rain too.
Yes, he's just like really good at this. Amazing production. It really kind of puts you in the scenario, and you can kind of imagine this, like, you know, it's pandemic theme. So like the dance floor is empty. The gym is empty. There's nobody else there. The lights are all out, and the dance lights are on, the streamers, balloons are on the ground. And she's just like, oh, there's nobody to perform for anymore. Now what am I gonna do? This is a song that it hits. When we get to that last chord, it hits really bad. It's like, sometimes I can't even listen to it because it's too powerful.
It's too powerful.
It's like, you shouldn't even be looking at it. Like, this is such a personal song. And like, coming hot off the heels of like 1989, Reputation, Lover, she hadn't been this candid in a hot second. This felt like, we're not supposed to know about this. The lyric that I chose was, I've never been a natural, all I do is try, try, try. And it's like, we're not supposed to know that. It's so vulnerable to admit that. It's just like so, oh, it's like reading the diary. It's like reading the diary.
I picked the same lyric as you, but I added in, I'm still a believer and I don't know why first. I think for this, you're cooking with something there. Like with Reputation and Lover, she was really in a place of being very defensive. There was not a lot of vulnerability on offer in her songwriting, rightfully so. Lover also was such a constructed album. It wanted to tell a very specific story, which is, I'm happy. But if you read a little too close into Lover, there's I'm mentally ill all over it. But she's hiding it with You'll Never Find Another Like Me. And I forgot that you've existed, all that stuff. Mirrorball, she's like really dropping her act. She said, I'm going to put the act down and tell you how I really feel.
She said, mask off, I'm broken. When they sent all the radio clowns home, when they took down the disco ball, all that kind of stuff, I'm still here, girls. I can't do anything else. What the fuck am I supposed to do right now? Well, she figured it out. I will say that.
She's like Tinkerbell. This is her Tinkerbell moment. If you don't clap, I'll die.
Right. If you don't clap, I'll die. And thank God she gave us a reason to clap. I'll never stop. I'm having a ball rooting for the anti-hero.
No, we really are. We're in Tay Warrior mode. Wedding has put us into Tay Warrior mode.
Yes.
Thank you, Taylor. What a beautiful song. 10 out of 10, obviously.
I give it a 100 out of 10.
Exactly, as you should.
It's personal.
Up next, we have one of the most underrated songs in her catalog. When we talk about underrated songs, we're like, everything is a shooter, and it's true. But I think this song, well, probably because it's like been adopted by a certain insane group of people. But if you take them away, I love this gorgeous, pensive, beautiful number. There's nothing quite like it in her catalog sonically. The vocal delivery is so good. And the bridge is like such a dispatch from a child's brain. I've been meaning to tell you your house is haunted. That's why your dad is mad. It's such a like, that's such a, I don't know how she dug so deep as to get in touch with that like really innocent and naive perspective. Like when you're a kid, you can't figure out why, like adults' moods and mischiefs are a mystery to you. You don't understand why things happen. You can only think of like things that you see in movies and like books and TV shows. And I think in the pandemic, a lot of us got back in touch with our like childhood selves, because the last time that we felt very like powerless or that the world was very mysterious and we didn't understand it was when we were children. And I just think that like, This is such an interesting following the thread down the rabbit hole moment.
Here we go. The song is powerful. Everything you said is true. I struggle to talk about the song. The song makes me think about my siblings. Here we go. I can't even talk about it. It's powerful. Passed on like folk songs, the love lasts so long. That's it. Like, that's the whole, the love lasts so long. It does. That's what's crazy. It lasts forever.
It never goes away. It never goes away.
Especially the second verse.
I never thought about how this could relate to people with siblings. That's actually really a beautiful
connection to make.
Yeah, it's not a concern of mine.
It's not a concern that you have. But yes, it's also, I did have, when I was very young, my next door neighbor was my best friend. And so that's kind of also what it makes me think of. But it's like, I don't know her anymore. That was a very long time ago. So I've started thinking about it in terms of my siblings, and it's even more true through that lens. I can't talk about it.
I think this song is about someone that she doesn't know anymore, though. Like, it does give neighbor, someone that I knew when I was young and I'm not still in touch with anymore. The lyric that I chose is, before I learned civility, I used to scream ferociously anytime I wanted. And I think, again, this is her feminist record. That is such a great lyric about not just being socialized to be an adult, where you obviously cannot run around screaming and expressing yourself the way that you did as a child, but also women are told to be good girls. You're told to be quiet. Taylor was told to, you know, not protest, not make a fuss. And I think she was getting back in touch with the times when she actually could just freely scream. What would it be like to scream ferociously?
Well, especially being a famous woman, also, like, you can't be crazy anymore. You know, you can.
And when you do,
moment. Yeah,
they say you. There's nothing like a mad woman.
They say there's nothing like a mad freaking woman. You made her like that. Write it down.
Every time you call me crazy, I get more crazy. That's science.
How about that? How about that?
What was your lyric that you picked? The Love Last Song?
I picked, I think your house is haunted. Your dad is always mad.
I love that. It's so, and that part of the song, it's like, how do I describe it? It's like the Cruel Summer Bridge, for real. It gives me that feeling. I'm like, I have to scream.
It's a rare song that's so quiet like this that just feels like I love it so much. I'm going to gouge my eyeballs out. Yeah.
Thank you. This album just really brings me back to where exactly the hell I was when it happened. I don't have another Taylor album that really situates me in a place, because I was stuck in one place for so long with just this to listen to. So I'm cooking. Up next is a song called August. Now, I've really gone on a journey with this. It's not my personal favorite song, but I really hated it when it came out for some reason. Oh. I think back, do you not remember? I used to be like number one August anti-warrior. Oh, I think I said, this is for stupid people. You're dumb if you like this.
Oh,
I was like, I've forgotten.
I've repressed this. I remembered that you thought that it was overrated. That's what I remembered. I didn't know that you were saying you're stupid if you like it.
No, I was really going off.
Oh, okay.
But Showgirl has put a lot of things in perspective for me. And this is one of those big moments on Folklore, which is why I think people loved it so much and made so much of it. Because, like, Folklore is a quiet, small, intricate album. This is a really bombastic moment. It's wistful for your youth in a very romantic way. I maintain that it is kind of a boring song until the specific timestamp of 1:40, where back when we were still that, now then we really start to cook. I think the Eras Tour really turned me around on it too.
This is interesting. These are interesting takes. I love this song. It's not my personal favorite from Folklore either, but it's one of those songs where when it's the right time, for example, when it's August and the salt air starts cooking, the song kind of, like, it's been so many years now that I keep coming back to it every August and, like, really listening to it so much that I find it nostalgic now. It's like nostalgic for something that never happened to me. I never was this lady, thank God. I never was this lady, thank God. But, like, it is nostalgic for me now, and it reminds me of the feeling that summer is ending soon, and, like, how, you know, that can be devastating some years, and, like, some years you look forward to it and some years it's just kind of whatever. But, like, it's always like a big feeling, like, oh my God, summer's coming to an end. Did I do everything I wanted to do? Did I see everything I wanted to see? Did I check everything off my list? And, like, now it's going to be either going back to school, which is a nightmare, or going back to see people that I don't like, which is a nightmare, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of associated with all that. The lyric that I picked, this is one of my favorite lyrics on Folklore. You're back beneath the sun, wishing I could write my name on it. It's so beautiful. It's so romantic. It's so lovely. The way that she sings it, it's gorgeous. I just love it. Absolutely love it. My fave.
It's Gorgina. My lyric that I picked, and this makes me go crazy, is wanting was enough. For me, it was enough.
Not for him.
Girl. Not for him. To be a gay teen and to have had this song would have really done something for me.
Yes.
To live for the hope of it all.
Can you imagine getting this album at age 17? I would have killed myself.
I would have been
a much better
person.
It was hard enough for me getting Speak Now.
Honestly, you know what? I feel like this Folklore is one of those albums that starts to click the more you get older. Like, as I'm approaching 30, I'm like, oh, this is making a lot more sense.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's just, it's one of, it's wise beyond its years, because she was, I think, younger than me when she wrote this album, younger than I am now, when she wrote this album. And now it's like, it still feels so like just wise beyond its years. It feels like
it requires hindsight, the accumulation of experience, you know, it's not one of those albums that instantly clicks, I think.
Yeah.
Right up next we have, I gave it a 7 out of 10.
I gave it a 10.
7 is a bit mean. I feel like I should revise to 8.
It's one of those songs that, like, I think some people loved it instantly, and, like, some people had to go on their journey, but I think everybody eventually comes around to, you know, she's August. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
She's the diva.
She's August.
Up next, This Is Me Trying. Again, another Swiftologist favorite that dropped off the face of the earth. This song was clearly a song written from empathy. It's about addiction. It's about, but I think it's vague enough and broad enough that it doesn't have to be about that as well. I do see it as a Mirabelle sister song in one way or another. The lyric that really kills me on this is, it's hard to be at a party when I feel like an open wound.
It's Girl. Hard to be anywhere in these days when all I want is you.
One is you.
You're a fast truck and a film reel on the one screen.
Coney Island is like her ugly sister.
We'll talk Coney Island when we get to Evermore. We'll talk Coney Island. She's another one of those kind of everybody's got an opinion on Coney Island songs. This Is Me Trying. It's really Jack. That's what I think every time I listen to it. Not lyrically,
it's so but Bleachers. Like, it's so very Bleachers.
And it's not a bad thing, but it just really makes me think of him when I listen to it, which again isn't a bad thing. The lyric that I picked was, "Am I words shoot to kill when I'm mad? I have a lot of regrets about that." Mm. Who can't relate? Who can't relate?
Especially Everybody, Taylor.
Her words have shot and killed
her words have literally murdered nations.
I also love the image of, like, pulled my car off the road to the lookout, could have followed my fears all the way down. It's really bleak. This is for when you hit rock bottom.
Pandemic. When you hit rock bottom. We needed it. This was a real song that we needed to hear in the pandemic. It was like, even if you're at your fucking lowest, you're trying. And I love the delivery of the last, "at least I'm trying." She like sighs it out.
That's powerful. It really is a beautiful song. I gave it a 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Period. It's folklore. You are constantly raising the bar. She is.
No, she is. Speaking of raising the bar, let's talk about another song that was one of my favorites that I kind of forgot about, but is having a resurgence now that I've listened to it again. Tay Shakespeare. Why do I not listen to this song more? It's so good, completely robbed of a full era's performance, by the way. It's also really, really painful. And this song is a very interesting maturing moment in her catalog, because Taylor's approach to writing about infidelity before this song was very much, shame on you, you're evil. And actually, the girl is also evil too. You're both evil. And this is the first time that she expresses or tries to really have some empathy for what it would be like to be the mistress, the person often viewed as like shattering a union. Now, is there a personal experience to that? Is it just her empathizing? We don't know.
We don't know.
But this is, again, part of her feminist album.
It is. You know what? It says, it Horse happens. Whores have rights too. It happens. And I empathize with the whores. I empathize with the cheaters.
They're not having fun either. They're not having fun. The cheaters
are just as miserable as everybody else, is what she's telling us. Don't let them fool you for one second with their happy little hug. They're fucking miserable. This is a song where I feel like it's half a song. I've always kind of felt that way about it, where it's like, it's a great half a song, but it's half a song. Kind of like now that we don't talk. I feel like it's half cooked. I mean, obviously the bulk of like the point of the song is covered, but I think we could have explored it just a little bit more. So I personally gave it 8 out of 10. It's kind of like, it's one of my skips, but only in the sense that I don't think about it. Does that make sense? Like, I just am like, I'd rather talk about
this. No, it doesn't
this.
Make sense to me, but I respect your position.
8 out of 10.
I respect you.
I picked the outro is obviously like way better than the rest of the song too. And songs like that bother me, where it's like this one part of the song is leaps and bounds better than the rest of it. But anyway.
I introduce you back to Cardigan.
And I introduce myself also to Cardigan. And it's very true. But the lyric that I picked was, you taught me a secret language I can't speak with anyone else. Beautiful.
It's evil. It's an evil, evil thing to say. Beautiful. I put, take the words for what they are, a dwindling mercurial high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but see, she never learns. The character
take
of the song.
Take it in.
Not Taylor, the character of the song. She never
well,
learns.
Well.
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 What can I
she's
say?
She's learned now.
Yep.
But it took a minute. It wasn't an instant realization, I wouldn't mm-hmm. say. Mm-hmm. Up next, we have what I consider to be definitely one of her most romantic songs and one of my favorite songs on this record, Invisible String, got a 10 out of 10 from me. There are so many intertextual references in this song. This song really cracked open the Taylor Swift cinematic universe. It was like the Pandora's box. There's the Lakes tie-in. The album hadn't even come out. She was already making connections there. The American Singer part, like referencing herself. Mm. Bad was the blood of the song in the cab. Mm. The dive bar, the delicate dive bar. Mistakes in barbed wire. Call it what you want. Cold was the steel of my axe to grind for the boys who broke my heart. Mm-hmm. Now I send their babies presents. That was my line pick here. This is such a clever, and this song is deceptive because it's so jaunty and breezy and like it's almost delivered as like, like a little thought you have. It's like the happy version of the one. But really when you get down to it, this song is written with such clarity and intention. Oh my God, it's beautiful.
It's interesting because this is one of the ones where we know that Taylor wrote to track. Like, Aaron sent her this, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and she just, like, said to herself, that kind of sounds like it's very stringy. Oh, invisible string. And she just, like, writing to track is one of the most interesting things that she does. Like, I want to get inside her fucking brain when she does this. So that's what makes this song so interesting to me because, like, it existed before Aaron really knew what it was, and like being able to give it to Taylor for her to create like probably the perfect life that this song, like this track could have had, is a really beautiful thought. And it's kind of meta. There's something kind of inception mm-hmm. about it because it's like the Invisible String was the song and our us becoming collaborators. I kind of like to think of it that way sometimes when I listen to it. Obviously, I sometimes feel like really romantic songs about how we're going to be together forever, about relationships that end, are cursed. And I'm like, it really does. I hate that I think this way, but I'm like, it changes the way that I approach the song. And it's like, I can never really see it the same way, which is unfortunate. Some songs I can swap out. This song, I think Taylor also had this opinion from the way she's treated it since.
She said, I never said that.
Can't do this one, but this is a song that always makes me cry every time I listen to it because the line that I picked is, you know, the main line of the song. Isn't it just so pretty to think all along there was some invisible string tying you to me? Indeed, it is. And the thought makes me cry my eyes out every single time because it.
I love the selection of the word pretty there.
It is, and the everything about it, like, this is one of those songs where every word feels very specifically chosen. Like, when she says, she said I looked like an American singer, she doesn't say, she said I look like Taylor Swift, even though that's probably what she said, an American singer. Like, it's very, like, it's in dedication to the flow of the song. Everything is chosen so deliberately. It's a very beautiful song. I give it a 9. Again, it's cursed. So, Joe Jonas,
temporarily.
Joe Jonas, but that's the other thing. Unforgiven again. It's like doubly cursed in that way. So I had to dock it a point. Cursed songs can't be 10 out of 10. So I gave it a 9.
Bad was the blood of the song in the cab is so funny too as well because that is such an unserious song to mention in this context.
And bad think blood. Joe Alden was sitting there listening to Bad Blood and going, this rocks. He wasn't.
I want to date this girl. Imagine listening to Bad Blood and going, that's my girlfriend. You're loca. Yeah.
Probably was like, ugh, this is America, huh? Well, yes. Bad was the blood of the song in the cab.
Back to this feminist that had a lot to say about me the other day in the press, Mad Woman. This song is a complete jaw drop and gag from the moment I first heard it. It's not a personal favorite of mine. I don't re-listen to it a lot, but it's that Lisa Rinna meme. Ooh, she's so angry. You're so angry. Ooh,
she is. There's like I love this kind of like quiet, well, it's female rage. Just like when Taylor was talking to Aaron about it, like this was another right to track. When she heard the track, she was like, oh, this is female rage. That quiet, kind of unsettling you don't know what's coming next kind of a vibe. I think, again, the writing to track thing, I want to cook inside her brain. I want to know what's going on in there because I would never have thought of this, but it's really perfect, the coupling of it. The quiet way that she sings, that intensity that's in her voice, it's just, she's a mad woman. The line that I picked, my favorite line in the song, I love the outro, but I picked this one. Women like hunting witches too, doing your dirtiest work for you. It's true.
So funny because the line I picked was, it's obvious that wanting me dead has really brought you two together. That gagged me a lot more than the fuck you forever. I was like, oh my God. She's pissed.
She's pissed. She's mad at every motherfucker in the situation. I love also when she says, good wives always know. It's like, uh-oh, she's talking about you.
She's talking about you, and she had to get her little dig at another woman in on her feminist song, which kills me. I love that. But again, Folklore, her feminist album, there are so many different betrayals by men referenced here and rejections of like patriarchal ideas, whether it's elopement with the Lakes, like, fuck this, I'm rejecting society entirely and I'm going to go live in a cottage with my man. Being an angry woman, every time you call me crazy, I get more crazy. Feeling empathy for the mistress, pissing your neighbors off, being too loud. I'm telling you. Feminist lore.
This is feminist lore, and they're not getting it. That's what's scary. I would say they need to hear it again. People today that aren't getting it.
Tell me she's a trad wife. Listen to this again and tell me she's a trad wife.
Tell me that. Listen to Mad Woman. Come back and tell me she's a trad wife. I regrettably gave Mad Woman an 8 out of 10. I don't listen to it. I have to be honest. Like, I just don't. I don't return to her.
I gave it a 7. Yeah, I don't listen to it that much. But I respect her for what she is. Here is what I consider to be Folklore's true flop. Like, this is a skip. And the more I listen to it, the stupider it becomes. Mm-hmm. I really hate this song. It's Epiphany. She's just doing her behaviors. It's like Only the Young to me. It's giving when they were banging pots and pans outside for the healthcare workers.
Yes.
Like, it's just, it's very dated and very of its time. She's also doing Tay British in this song, which I don't love. I obviously can't speak on behalf of the medical community, but it does seem like an accurate and empathetic read on that experience from that particular time. And I know that a lot of people found comfort in that, but I look back on it and I'm like, this is aging poorly.
Well, the thing that I really hate the most about the song is just the way that it's structured. Keep your head.
It's so annoying.
Take your iPhone. It's terrible. It's bad. It's a bad song. It's a bad song, in my opinion.
Some of us got this as a surprise song.
I respect the effort put in. Mashed up with Mirrorball. If she ever did that to Mirrorball in my presence, I would leave the stadium. I'd be like, that's
it. No, it was egregious. I was like, yes, Mirrorball! And then, keep your... I was like, you're fucking kidding me. We hate this.
I definitely have encountered people, specifically nurses, actually, a few nurses who were like, I love that song. You know, it was kind of like, I respect that perhaps it's for them. It was not for me. It was not for the service workers of the world. I'll tell you that for free. We hated this shit. I remember at the grocery store I was in the parking lot when I worked in the box, in the parking lot of the grocery store, and some fucko put Heroes Work Here in giant letters at the grocery store. And I was like, does nobody else find this incredibly condescending and patronizing? And like, that's kind of the same vibe that I get out of Epiphany. Heroes work here. And what are you doing, pray tell?
Not
what
working.
What are you doing, pray tell? While not the working. Rest of us are fighting for our lives out here. So I just personally, all respect in the world to the healthcare workers who are like, I love the song. I totally get it. For me, my perspective on it is a little bit different. I give it a 3. I say it is the Folklore flop. Folk flop. A piff of flop.
I gave it a 2, and it just stands out so much because everything else is great. Like, even the songs that I've given, like, a 7, or even, like, an Exile. Exile is still a really good song. It's not my favorite song, but compared to Epiphany, Epiphany is just Taylor doing behaviors. It's when she was at the VMAs, and she was like, let's talk about 9/11. Okay.
Yeah, that is, it's in that genre of Taylor behavior, and, you know, I she wants to speak up. She wants to speak up now. I have no
This
comment.
Is Speak Up Now. It is
Speak
Up
this
Now.
Is speak up
so
now.
She can enjoy that. Yep. Up next, let's get on to something good, which, and you know what? This song is now kind of tainted because it's like, okay, so you wove in Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds' children's names onto your most iconic cursed. Album of all time. Now they're not at your wedding. Cursed. There is something cursed about it. Folklore cursed. Yeah. Well, Folklore does curse sometimes. Folklore isn't always
folklore
happy.
Folklore is.
Can be spooky.
there's something kind of like voodoo-esque about folklore. I haven't even cooked on that yet, but like there's an energy behind her. And Betty being cursed, Invisible String being cursed, technically Exile being cursed, if you think about it, Cardigan being cursed, it's all cursed. And that's what makes it so
great. It's all cursed. Peace is cursed. Hoax is cursed. Like, it literally is a cursed album.
Cursed. But it's great, and I love it. Betty?
Betty, great song. What can I say? This is a classic Taylor Country song. When I heard this one, I was like, it's so nice to hear from you again, ma'am. It's been a minute, and I don't know if I want a whole album of this, but I'm really glad that I have this moment to cook on. It's a Cousin of Mary's song, so I did dock at 1 point, 9 out of 10. It's like a straight person's love story, like in real straight people terms. So it, yeah, sure, cute.
Yeah.
I love a love story. I love a key change. It's a movie. It's very cinematic. But, you know, yeah, she's good. She's fun.
She's a cute girl. Cute next to gorgeous. That's kind of the way I think of Betty. Famously, I don't know the words to Betty. This is kind of
I forgot to say. Madeline famously doesn't know the words.
I don't know the words. I will say it's a joke, obviously, but I will say off the cuff, I would struggle. When I'm listening to it, I know the words, but like off the top of my head, I do kind of struggle a little bit. It's not my favorite. I don't listen to it. It's a lot of words. It's very verbose. I also like couldn't pick a lyric from it because I find it to be a storytelling song where no one line really leaps out. All of the lines kind of need each other from the narrative. But I will say I love the outro. I love that key change. Kissing in your car again. Bow, bow. I love that live on the Eras Tour. It was great. I gave it an 8 out of 10. I wouldn't call myself a Betty detractor. I'd call myself a Betty Gnostic. I have no Betty opinion.
I gave it a 9 out of 10. That was my Betty opinion here. I think also, you know, I just don't care for it that much. I don't listen to it. But the lyric that I picked was, if you kiss me, will it be just like I dreamed? Will it patch your broken wings? I think that's pretty. And also, will it patch your broken wings? I have a video of Taylor clocking me and opening her eyes really wide during that moment. So I had to cheer for that.
She clocked you and she looked right at you.
When she was looking in my eyes, I had to pretend I was Betty number one stan. You better believe I was 10 out of 10 Betty in that moment.
In that moment, you were basically Betty, period.
Also, the only live performance that we got during the era was of this song.
Yeah, they really cooked on that.
Hair by Taylor Swift, styling by Taylor Swift, makeup by Taylor Swift,
khakis by Taylor Swift.
We'll get into that in the 2020 episode.
It was interesting.
Up next, we're getting into the real deep, dark parts of folklore now. Peace. I gave it a 10 out of 10. This song was the Joe Alwyn you're fired from the role of Taylor Swift's boyfriend. The psychosis here is large, but it is sister songs too with Mirrorball, because this is really her trying to make peace with the negative parts of the reality of her life that she hasn't really written about vulnerably before. She's very deflated here. Her most public, her album that was most like meta and referencing her public image was Reputation, but the tone of that was like, fuck you, I'm in love with my man and he's everything I need. Mm-hmm. Call it what you want. But this song is very, what if I call it what you want and you still don't put a ring on my finger? Then what?
Well, we know then what. Even statues crumble if they're made to wait. Even statues crumble if they're made to wait. I think Peace, this is an interesting song because I find it to be one of the most romantic songs ever written, but it's also cursed. Mm-hmm. It's also cursed. I think
the answer is no. The question she's
asking.
Incredibly
romantic.
No.
Yes. It's, would it be enough if I can never give you peace? The right person would say yes to that question. And that's why it's kind of romantic. I think it's romantic from her perspective and not so much his, if that makes sense. Like, her, what she's saying is incredibly romantic, but what we know the answers to be and what we know the way that he thought about the situation was, that's when it becomes unromantic. If I didn't know who the song was about and I didn't know how everything went, I'm pretty sure I would think this would be the most romantic song ever written. It's incredibly beautiful. I think it goes beyond, there's so many ways that you can think of it. I loved what Aaron said in the Folklore Long Pond sessions about how, no, he can't relate to Taylor being incredibly famous, but as somebody who struggles with depression, like, that's something that you think about. Like, I'm never going to be that normal person. The rain is always going to come when you're standing with me. For people who struggle with any number of things, addiction, anxiety, depression, like, just not being that perfect person, I think anybody could relate to this song, honestly. Like, would it be enough if I can never be perfect? You know what I mean? And nobody can be. And the right person would say yes to that question. So I find it very beautiful.
As Hannah Montana said, nobody's perfect. I got to work it, first of all. But secondly, I find it so interesting that you think the song is really romantic, because even if I don't know that it's about Joe, I find the man that's being described in this song to be deeply troubling to me. Like the part where she's talking about, your integrity makes me feel small, and I'm scared to talk about you with my friends because I feel like I'm betraying that integrity of yours. It really seems to me that she is putting herself down in this song, which is why I don't view it as romantic, but there is something very vulnerable about it, and I picked the same line as my favorite. The rain is always going to come if you're standing with me.
You know, it's interesting because I actually don't hear that part of the song as her putting herself down. It's definitely putting him up, but when you get in a relationship with somebody, especially somebody who you think, I think Mason's a better person than I am. I know he is. And that's not me putting myself down. Let me give you an example. Mason is like the first person when somebody knocks stuff up down at the grocery store. I'm usually somebody who's like, well, that's your journey, queen. Mason stops what he's doing and he helps whoever it is pick stuff up. And it's like that right. To me, it's like, that's just not me. And there's something so amazing about being able to see the person that you're in love with and like really see them in ways that they can't even see themselves. Like to think he's such like, they are such like an amazing person. And I am like, I'm kind of evil. I'm kind of evil. And yet it's like they're in love with me anyway. So I guess it kind of depends on like your outlook on it. Again, because we know it's about Joe Alwyn, it's hard to separate.
Maybe the Joe is coloring it for me, because I know Joe is nothing like Mason. Joe wishes he was Mason. Could never be Mason.
Joe wishes he was Mason. Of course, a lot of people wish they were Mason. There's also one time we were in the airport, and this lady was running with her toddler, and her flip-flop caught the ground, and she face-planted on the ground. My immediate reaction was to turn away, to act like I hadn't seen it, to spare her the embarrassment. Mason's was to rush over and try to help her up. So I was like, this is,
I fear, unfortunately, I'm kind of with you on this one. I'm kind of, maybe I'm a bad person. Sorry.
Just that he's like, he just has like so much more of a pure soul than I do. I'm not like that. And it's okay to know that. I'm not Miss Perfect Mother Teresa. Mason is kind of Mr. Teresa in so many ways. But my favorite line from this song is, all these people think love's for show, but I would die for you in secret. It's so romantic.
Yeah, that's a good line.
And true.
That's a very good line.
All these people think love's for show. They all think that everything that I do, like Madison Square Garden, for example, you think that's what this is all about. But if all the cameras went away and I had to get married in a hovel with Travis, I would do it because I would die for you in secret. Say it. Loud and proud.
10 out of 10. I gave it a 10 because I think it's an amazing song.
I gave it 100.
Lots of 100s here. Lots of 100s. Speaking of, I think we might be getting to an 1,000. This is Hoax,
well, yes.
The official last song on the record. Now, I gave it a 9 out of 10 because I really respect the power that Hoax has, but I don't speak Hoaxanese. I think Madeline might be one of the only people in the world that, and even she will admit to you that she only gets like 75% right. of Hoaxanese. And that's part of Hoaxanese, is that you can't get it. It's not supposed to be got. It's a really baffling song, and it really scares me. Like, when I listen to this song, I'm terrified of her, of what? That's really what I'm most scared of. What the hell is the thing that was done to you?
You know, in my episode right before the wedding, where I like went through and I talked about all the lyrics about marriage and weddings and in her songs, and like kind of traced her relationship with it and the way she's thought about it over time, I came to Hoax, and like, I've never thought about it before, but I started thinking about, you know, your faithless love, this hoax, a hoax being a relationship that leads to nothing and nowhere. Like, you know, a hoax is some, I believe in it, and even though I know it's not true, like, you're never going to ask me to marry you.
Okay, now, so that's, yes.
Well, this is the fun thing about Hoax, is you can kind of, like, play around with it in a way, and it's like in the eye of the beholder. Anything that you kind of can cobble out of it, whether it's your own personal situation or if you're kind of like daydreaming as you're listening to the song and thinking, what is she talking about? Who is she talking about? You can find so many different trails to follow. It's intentionally vague. It's very voodoo. Something is occurring there that is not meant for us to know, and that's what I love the most about it. I would never say I know what the song is about. I don't think anybody does. Betrayal is a really good guess. trapped in a relationship that's going nowhere is another good guess. I'm sad is another good guess. Like, anything that you want to guess that's miserable is probably right. I love this song. My favorite line, my broken drum, you have beaten
that's what I picked.
My heart. It's that so fucking line, sad.
You have beaten my heart. What the?
It's crazy.
What the hell? I feel like, you know what this really gives to me? It gives that he said something to her. It's, you know, when you're like in a really bad fight with something and you say something you just cannot take back and it will like forever hang between you.
Yeah.
That is what that line is giving to me. Like, it's an unforgivable character judgment or character assassination, something maybe that she has thought about herself or that other people have said about her that has really hurt her, that she's like confided in this person about and has been weaponized against her. That is pure projection, but like, that's what it gives to me. And well, I see what you mean now with Hoax. It can give anything.
You knew the password, so I let you in the door. You knew exactly how to work me. You knew. There's also something Maddie about the song, but we can't even get into that.
I gave you the knife to stab that. Me with is what it gives.
Yeah, and it's very true, and she's done that. When you're that kind of person who gives yourself 100% loyalty, I am with you 100%, I am riding until we die, that's like the way that Taylor is, that really is handing somebody the knife to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
She's done it time and time again. And you know what? She's never going to stop doing it. Thank God. Because she's the diva. And that's one of my favorite things about her.
We need broken drums. We need the broken drums. We need to hear about it.
We need to hear about that.
I feel like Hoax is such a weird place to leave the album, which is why The Lakes being the real closer to me is a lot better.
Yeah.
But Hoax is, it's a confounding place to leave it. It's not a bad choice. It's just like a really strange, on an album of such like clarity and specificity, I guess it's not that specific, though. It is vague throughout. So I'm going to take that back. I didn't mean that. I don't know her. But The Lakes is the perfect conclusion to me. This song, it's one of the greatest in her catalog. When I was listening to it again, I was like, we are so blessed that we got this start to finish as a surprise song. It's so defiant and romantic. It's very Wuthering Heights to me in a way. The opening line is already such a fucking bar. Why is everyone saying that I'm dead when they're trying to say good things about me? Why am I over before I've even really gotten started? Who are you to eulogize me when I'm still here? And she says, I don't need any of this. I need my man, I need a pen, and I need a garden to look at. Well, keep dreaming, diva, I would say to that.
Yeah, keep dreaming,
that's not diva. Your journey. That's not your journey. What should be over burrowed under my skin and heart-stopping waves of hurt? Hello! I think this is really feminist as well. This is her trying to be like, you know what? I don't need a ring, her delusion. I don't need a ring. I don't need to get married. I just need you and a cottage and a red rose growing up out of the ground, and that's it. She was wrong, but she tried.
And this was one of those moments where she's doing her, I'm so famous, it's miserable. But like, it was really relatable, I think, to the masses because of the pandemic. And I think everybody was saying, I want to go to the lakes where all the poets went to die. I want wisteria and poetry. Like, that's what I want. I want sad prose. Like, I want all of this stuff. I just want to disappear into the woods.
I feel alive.
Really related to that. Yeah, and people really related to that. So it's a perfect, perfect situation for a song like this to come out, even though it's, like, really specific. If you think about it, like, it's so specific, but it's one of those great songs where it's, like, it makes the micro into the macro. Like, so many people could relate to this song, and it's really beautiful. The line that I picked, this is random, but this is what I picked. I'm not cut out for all these cynical clones, these hunters with cell phones. I'm not.
There are so many bars in this song. There are so many bars in this song. That wasn't the lyric I picked, by the way. The lyric I picked was, I've come too far to watch some name-dropping sleaze tell me what are my words worth. After My Tears Ricochet, I really needed to hear this because otherwise it was like, I'm going to kill myself. We're going to do a suicide pact and we're both going to die because I can't. And this was like, oh my God, she was starting to get up on her good foot with this. She was like, I'm ready. Yeah. She's like, I'm gonna go again. I'm gonna start going again. And also the wordplay, you know, the lakes and the association with Wordsworth, having it together, like the it was just incredible.
It was Shakespearean. To me. It was Shakespearean. I don't belong. I also think this was like one of the first times where she really, obviously Mad Woman, she's pissed, but like this was a song, the first time where she was like, I'm coming for you. I'm not going to let you do it. I'm coming for you. And so it's a great place to end Folklore. It is, you know, Hoax, the one and Hoax's bookends, like that's kind of a different album.
Mental illness.
Mental illness. The one and the lakes is very like dreamy.
Yes!
And you know what I mean?
It feels like the beginning and end of a book. Like it's closed. Yeah. Like, okay, we have the one is like, what's going to happen? And the lakes was like, I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I love the lake. I think it honestly should have been on the main edition. I don't get why it's a bonus track if I'm speaking my truth.
Yeah, Epiphany gets to be on the main edition and this doesn't. Yeah. Okay, good luck with booking that stage you speak of.
Yeah, period. So, yeah.
No offense to the nurses out there. Glad that you have that song.
So here's my ranking. So at Dead Last, I have Epiphany. That's where you belong. Much higher up, I then have Exile. Sharing one slot, I have Betty, Mad Woman, and Illicit Affairs. Above that, I have A Visible String. Above A Visible String, I have Cardigan. Then I have my Perfect Tens. This is me trying The Last Great American Dynasty, My Tears Ricochet, 7 in August. Then I have my 100s, The Lakes, Hoax, Peace, The One, and Mirrorball. It's a perfect album. What can I say?
So I have, yes, at the very bottom, pretty much exactly, Epiphany. Then I have Exile. And then I have Mad Woman. Actually, then I'm getting into a five-song tie. Mad Woman, August, Cardigan, Hoax, and This Is Me Trying. Then randomly Betty gets up there. I don't know how that happened. And then I have a first-place tie for The One, The Last Great American Dynasty, My Tears Ricochet, Mirrorball, 7, Illicit Affairs, Invisible String, Peace, and The Lakes. If I had to pick my top three from Folklore, I think I would go with My Tears Ricochet, The Lakes, and The One.
I think mine would be The One. Oh, damn. This is hard.
Okay, I'm looking at one, Mirrorball and going, let me in!
I'm going to say The One, Hoax, and The Lakes. That was hard. I didn't like that.
Period. We have two in common.
We do. And you know what? That's the power of folklore. Even Louis Vuitton makes mistakes. Even Louis Vuitton makes mistakes.
Folklore lasts so long.
Epiphany. Folklore lasts so long.
Maybe it is. It is maybe her, like, with that one skip, this is her closest to a front to back. It really is. This in 1989. Yeah. From listening all the way through.
Yeah. And for an album like this, it's actually really hard to do. For an album that's like this, like deep, like you can't really do that with a Phoebe Bridgers. You know what I mean? You can't really do that with a Gracie. It's too, you have to be in the mood for every individual song. With Folklore, it's like, turn it up every song. You're doing every emotion on 100. And then by the end, you're like, that was incredible. Epiphany, you're out. You are out of the listening session. You are out of the listening session. That is the
We've
one
had
song
enough
I
of
really,
you.
I cannot listen to that song.
Well, I think that's all we've got. We're going to see you back in December for our Evermore 6-year revisited, I suppose. Why the hell not? What else did we want to say? Well, next week's episode is going to be a clip from the Showgirl Experience. So you won't get a public episode. You're going to get a little taste of that. And then the full thing will be posted on the Patreon, which you can purchase. There will be a discount for Patreon members, of course. And we will see you in August.
Yep. So powerful.